I'm Jean Tiberio, and I'm a nutritionist and a wellness coach. Welcome to Healing Outside the Box. This is episode 104, and I'm calling it Lessons Learned from Rio about Food Quality and Sustainability. I just came across an article in the magazine called The Nation. This article was entitled Slow Food Nation, How Brazil Challenged the Junk Food Industry and Became a Global Leader in the Battle Against Obesity. I thought this article was important enough to spend an episode discussing the points that were made here. But before I do that, I wanted to say that I was watching TV one day when I saw a public service announcement about prejudice. The voiceover repeatedly mentioned the words, "We are not the same." One student after the next told us about stinging and even racist remarks that they received regarding a stereotype of their particular ethnicity. Seemingly statements like, "I thought you Chinese people were all good at math," at first may appear not to be racist, but it points to the basic definition of a stereotype, and that is lumping everyone in one particular group and making a judgment based on that group. The point was that each student was unique in this particular case, and that uniqueness should be respected. And that's true enough. But is the reverse also true? Should we be celebrating our sameness and how much we're connected to each other? I believe we should. Maya Angelou has a poem that goes something like, "We are more alike, my friends, than we are unalike." The one thing that mapping the human genome made crystal clear is that our DNA is almost identical. The human genome is a complete set of a nucleic acid sequence that is encoded as part of our DNA, making up 23 chromosome pairs inside of our cells in something called our mitochondria. There are an estimated 20 to 25,000 human protein coding genes. In other words, genes that code for specific proteins. A few of these proteins are called melanins, and melanins compose a class of compounds that serve predominantly as a pigment. These pigments come from the amino acid tyrosine. And as we learned in a previous podcast episode, I'll see if I can find the link for the show notes, tyrosine is an amino acid that all of us have naturally in our bodies. There are three basic types of naturally occurring melanins. These types of melanin differ slightly in their properties, which may suggest slightly different responses when they are exposed to light, like the light from the UV rays coming from the sun. These melanin particles differ a little in their ability either to absorb light or to reflect and scatter light. All this is to say that perhaps the only difference among Native Americans, Europeans, West Africans kidnapped into slavery, and all the populations in the Middle East is small differences in melanin. And of course, this was determined by how far our ancestors lived from the equator. That's it, folks. That's our difference. Anyway, back to a review of Slow Food Nation. This article was written by Bridget Huber, who does a tremendous job giving us a picture through words of what it is like in Brazil and then technically also in other countries. I'm going to review what she wrote, but I wanted to first give her the thumbs up for writing such a great article. So let's get back to the story. In the center of the story is a guy by the name of Carlos Montero. Carlos Montero first worked as a pediatrician in the poor villages in urban slums in the state of São Paulo, Brazil. These children were malnourished with stunted growth and multiple deficiencies. He has since been promoted and is now a professor of nutrition and public health at the University of São Paulo. Right now he is occupied with the opposite problem that Brazil and many nations face. Brazilians have become obese. In the late 70s, only 1% of men and 8% of women in Brazil were obese. Now more than half of Brazilians are overweight and 18% are obese. This is very much like our stats here in the U.S. And I add as a side note that even our cats and dogs in this country are getting fat. One time we were discussing this, and my response was, well, of course, they're eating the same pink slime that we are. Dogs I can understand, because they'll eat nails or pantyhose, and basically don't know when to stop. But cats are fussy, and generally pick at their food, and thumb their nose at food that is not to their liking. My cat Betty, for example, will often lick the gravy, which has a high fat content, make sure there's plenty of food in her dish, and walk away, only coming back when she's hungry again. So why are cats and dogs obese? That's a complicated question for another podcast, perhaps. But let's go back to our Brazilian friends. We shouldn't be surprised at this because Americans are exporting not only junk food, but our desire and perhaps some say addiction to foods that are high in sugar and fat. Rates of diabetes and some cancers have skyrocketed in Brazil. Carlos Monteiro has been studying the epidemiological data on what his countrymen and countrywomen are eating. He has been watching the shift from food prepared in the kitchen to ultra-processed convenience foods such as instant noodles, soda, processed meats, etc. They have replaced beans and rice and produce that was their daily intake for hundreds of years. Monteiro states that this dietary deterioration doesn't just harm bodily health, but also the environment, local economics, and Brazil's rich food traditions. Our food corporations have aggressively expanded into Latin America. Also, anti-poverty efforts like minimum wage increases and programs similar to the food stamps here have resulted in more income that is now going to buy soda and junk food. Monteiro is now taking this on as his new passion. Some of his reforms that he has already enacted have been proposed here in the U.S., but generally have lost to corporate interests. But this hasn't gone unnoticed. Other countries are watching, say Mexico, who enacted a tax on sugary beverages in 2014. Chile and Ecuador also have taxes on soda. In Brazil, it's a bit more complicated. Brazil has become one of the largest exporters of soybean and also one of the top pesticide users. And Brazil has been cutting down its large forests to make grazing land for its large cattle population. Brazil is now feeding much of the world its beef. A few years ago, in 2014, the Ministry of Health released new dietary guidelines, and Monteiro helped lead the team that wrote them. The guidelines included the social, cultural, and ecological dimensions around what Brazilians eat. They also focus on the pleasure that comes from cooking and sharing meals. And I love that part. They're actually writing into the guidelines the importance of gaining pleasure from what we eat. Nutrition advocates around the world are watching to see how these efforts play out in Brazil and neighboring countries. This situation, however, is far from perfect. There are those on the, as we say, other side of the aisle that are proposing steep cuts in programs to feed the poor. And there are Brazilian interests that are acting like little mafias in terms of kickbacks in the skimming of federal funds. But there is also this. Latin America's food industry isn't backing down. Like it is here, the food industry is fighting regulations and lobbying for their own interests. Trade groups have joined forces with the U.S.-based Grocery Manufacturers Association, they're the bad guys, to fight attacks on soda and restrict food advertising that targets children. In this article, they give an example of a woman who is pushing her cart up a steep hill. She is selling products door-to-door for Nestle. Nestle is employing these poor folks, mostly women, to sell their products. And the products, as you can imagine, have a very long shelf life, such as candy bars, instant noodles, and other junk food. And they're selling them door-to-door to low-income consumers, perhaps many of them don't have a car to drive to the bigger supermarkets. Some of these U.S. companies, like Nestle, also cater to the poor by allowing them a few weeks to pay for their goods. In the Amazon region, believe it or not, there is now a floating supermarket that sells junk food on a barge. And I thought only rubbish floated up and down on a barge. Silly me. Food can actually travel this way as well. So Nestle is selling its junk food in smaller, cheaper packages like those found in instant pudding that we see on the shelves rather than in the refrigerator where pudding should be. Montero believes that nutritionists need to overhaul the way they think and talk about healthy diets. And I totally agree. Because if we don't fight this uphill battle, we will be, I know you're going to hate this, downstream without a paddle. Brazilians are now consuming less beans and rice, less milk, eggs, flour, and produce. They are eating, not surprisingly, more processed and ready-to-eat foods. Soda consumption in Brazil has doubled. The sales of those sweet, milky drinks are also up. But Montero is not giving up. Montero says in this article that traditionally, nutritionists have focused on food groups and nutrients like sugar, protein, fat. The more meaningful distinction is how the food is made. Montero also says, and this has been said here, that these processed foods encourage overeating, both because they are engineered by food scientists to induce cravings and because the manufacturers spend lavishly on marketing in putting together those cute little individual packaging. So where does all this leave a lower to low middle income Brazilian family? Many of these families can't afford to return to a time when one person stayed home and cooked all the meals. Well, Montero and others are thinking about this. He points out Brazil's new per kilo restaurants. These restaurants serve fresh homemade dishes to diners who pay by weight. This also provides jobs and more opportunities for local farmers to bring fresh food into settings like schools, hospitals, and the military. So the nutrition experts are not suggesting women go back to the kitchen. Actually, far from it. They are all starting a dialogue to talk about how people should eat and how they should share this responsibility. Many things are headed in the right direction, and one of those is the Brazilian school lunch program. This school lunch policy, which has become central to addressing hunger, poverty, and now obesity, has become an example for the rest of the world. Students get healthy meals at many of these schools, while family farmers, who are often at risk of poverty themselves, get access to a large and consistent market. Presently, Brazilian law guarantees each public school student, from nursery school to adult education, at least one free meal each day. It says that 70% of federal school lunch funds must go to basic foodstuffs that are natural or not processed. They promote local farmers. And this is interesting. The law states that descendants of slaves have priority as recipients of the federal school lunch dollar. The law requires that councils should be made up of parents, students, and government representatives to monitor school lunch programs and to make sure they're providing safe, healthy meals and spending the money properly. Local co-ops are part of this picture as well. Some local farmers have seen their income almost double. In the 70s, the local farmers had to go to the cities where they were paid the minimum because they didn't have a formal education. Now the local farmers are selling in the countryside and supplying the local schools with their fresh food. Sounds like a good idea to me. According to many experts, Brazil now has the best nutritional guidelines in the world. Montero also states in this article that people don't necessarily need to understand the difference between saturated fats and unsaturated fats. That's the responsibility of nutritionists like myself. The guide recommends avoiding processed foods and gives a detailed description of how these products harm physical health, social life, and the environment. This is the part I really like in this law. It states that pleasure is an essential part of the new food guide, which frames cooking as a time to enjoy yourself with family and friends and not a burden. So instead of saying you should have this many grams of fat or that many grams of fiber each day, the guideline focuses on meals. And let's face it, I don't even look at the pyramid, so I wouldn't expect other people to. Montero insisted that the guidelines be based on a sustainable system. It addresses the environmental impact of one of Brazil's main exports, and that is, of course, beef. While it doesn't criticize the meat industry as strongly as it does the processed food industry, the guide encourages a diet based mainly on plants, stating that limiting foods derived from animals will help reduce greenhouse gas emissions, deforestation, and water use. The U.S. guidelines, even though they had good intentions, make no mention of sustainability. The panel in Brazil recommended that sustainability be addressed, particularly in relation to meat consumption. But here, the U.S. meat industry launched a lobbying campaign that ultimately kept sustainability concerns out of the guidelines altogether. In the article, they mention this guy named Barry Popkin, who is a nutrition researcher at the University of North Carolina. He is also a longtime collaborator of Carlos Montero's. He states, quote, "We all have to do more serious things," end quote. Among the serious things that Popkin is suggesting is higher tax on sugary drinks and restrictions on kid-friendly advertising. In other countries, health advocates have been watching Mexico's soda tax closely. Berkeley, California became the first U.S. city to institute a soda tax back in 2014. Philadelphia then became the second city to adopt a soda tax. Popkin, in this country, says it is probably going to be the lower to middle income countries that will continue to lead on food policy. He cites Chile, Thailand, India, and South Africa as promising. Economics is the reason for this. While the U.S. has managed to basically ignore the cost of diet-related diseases, basically saying it's a mess, but what can we do? Other low- and middle-income countries don't have that luxury. In other words, they simply don't have the money to treat 50 million diabetics. And Carlos Montero goes on to talk about social reasons as well. He says that Brazil's dietary guidelines had strong support from the grassroots healthy food movement, and these groups were part of the creation of this new law. I believe this could also happen in our country, and in my opinion, sooner rather than later would be a good idea. Perhaps these grassroots healthy food movement people could be part of the solution here. Even with the rapid rise in some junk food consumption, Latin American countries love to cook and cherish their food traditions around family and friends. And amen to that. I'll leave you with a quote from Carlos Montero. Quote, "I have two abiding commitments. One is to the independence and social responsibility of scientists. The other is to the health and welfare of the people, beginning with my own country, but also internationally." End quote. Three cheers for Carlos Montero. If nothing else, he deserves the gold medal in humanity. That's all I have for you today. Be well and stay tuned next week for another episode of Healing Outside the Box.